The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Waiting in the airport.
So there you go. That was the Devlins. That was 1997, which, as you know, is only about 5 or 6 years ago. Across that 5 or 6 year period, the guys have been deep in conflict, haven't spoken to each other. It's been all very tough. And they finally put all their grievances behind them and decided to start releasing albums together. Colin and Peter are with me now. Am I over-egging this slightly, lads? Am I going...
No, keep going.
Yeah, yeah. Keep going. Anything for, you know, for the publicity.
Did you just attack each other on Twitter? It was like Noel and Liam, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. We were waiting for the big money offers to roll in.
What is it like thinking that 1997 was nigh on 30 years ago? Does it seem that long ago? We'll just listen to Waiting There. Like, that's...
Lorraine showed me a photo of the last time we were in Whelan's, because we're playing in Whelan's on Thursday. And the last time we were there, there's a photo of us doing a sound check. And then in the corner, you can see our two daughters doing their homework. They're in primary school. And I know it's bad parenting, yeah, but bringing them to Whelan's when they're
acing it there, Peter, acing it.
Yeah. But yeah, when you look at that and see how young they were when we were doing, you know, we were gigging, that's a bit frightening, yeah.
No pints, though. There were no pints.
They weren't drinking. Good.
And they were doing their homework is the main thing. I mean, that could be a lot worse, let's be clear. By the way, that, we were just talking during the break about the PCH and all the... Do I have it right? Was the video for Waiting filmed in California or New Mexico or somewhere like that? It had a desert look, didn't it?
No, we were playing at Red Rocks with Tori Amos, and we had a few hours. We had a day and we needed a video. So we had a Super 8 camera. And we did it ourselves. And that's all shot in and around Red Rocks at the venue. And then there's a scene in the video where I'm driving this, you know, this beautiful old car. And it was just these two girls who were coming to the show. And we stopped them and said, listen, any chance we could borrow your car for half an hour? And, you know, so, yeah, Red Rocks. It was all filmed, all Super 8.
So that wasn't stylistic Super 8. That was, you had a Super 8
genuine
and that
Super
worked.
8 and, yeah, it worked.
Post the Kodak cartridges to the only lab in the world that still develops them, which is in Switzerland, and wait for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks for the processed film to come back. Yeah.
What's it like playing Red Rock on the bill with Tori Amos? That must be cool.
Yeah, as a three-piece.
It was great. I mean, we've been very lucky with the tours that we've done, but, you know, that particular one was amazing because it was, you know, it was Red Rocks, it was the Royal Albert Hall, it was, you know, Madison Square Gardens, it was just all of these iconic venues. So it was amazing.
Of them, yeah. Which are the ones that live up to the hype? Because it's funny, when you hear people, when you talk about artists talk about venues, often the ones that they like are not the ones that are big, giant spectacles. They're things like the Olympia where the audience is close and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Of all of them, which was the one that went, yeah, this is actually as good as I had hoped it would be?
God, I mean, I remember playing when we did the Albert Hall, it was two nights actually, and with Tori Amos, and I remember looking up at the, you know, with the boxes, and when you're from the stage, you know, you look at it and it never ends, you know, the boxes just go up and up and up, sort of almost like the sphere or something, you know. I remember sort of thinking, looking up and going, wow, this is pretty crazy. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, and again, Madison Square Gardens is amazing because it's New York, and, you know, and you kind of, you walk down the corridor, pictures of all the people who have played there, or, you know, like,
oh, that's like intimidating.
The Pope, Nadi Comaneci, you know, gymnasts, and then I was okay until I got to the Pope, and then you kind of get in a lift and go, and then you get out of the lift and you're there on the stage, you know, and that's but all fantastical.
And then at the other end of the spectrum, there are the ones that are really disappointing, which are the, you know, like ones like the Whiskey or the Roxy, you know, because we were in the States last week and played the Whiskey, which is an iconic venue, but you arrive in and it's just a dingy small rock club, you know. It's those kind of, the Whiskey and the Roxy, those kind of places that are so famous, but really, you know, you walk in and you go, it's a bit underwhelming.
So when you play US gigs, is it a US crowd that comes? Is it an Irish American crowd that comes? Is it a half and half?
It's a mixture, I think, really, yeah. Because, I mean, we did a lot of touring in the States in like the early 2000s, it's a real mixture, because we played everything from this, you know, the like crappiest clubs to theaters to big venues, everything in between. And so I think it's, and because we were initially signed to Capitol Records in LA, It was a, you know, there was a sort of genuine large, like, American fan base as well as as well as Irish Americans, which are, you know, fantastic support for any like new bands coming through. They're always brilliant, you know. Which is
and you based yourself in LA for some time, then, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
There's parts of it I like.
Oh, that's
there's parts
with
that
faint praise. that pause was pregnant. You're not racing back.
Well, I live there. I live in Pasadena.
Still?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you had returned home.
No, but we live in Pasadena with my wife and two kids. And which is a beautiful city. That's a gorgeous place. And it's close to LA. So, that's where we are.
This explains your detailed knowledge of the PCH that we were discussing during the break. And you're still Irish-based, presumably?
Yes, yeah, I'm in Dublin. Yeah.
So how then did you decide we're going back to working as the Devlins again? Because obviously you had your own sort of stuff. As you had talked about, you had done an EP, but we hadn't had an album in some time. What caused you to say, let's get at it?
Well, you know, both Colin and myself and Mark and Guy, you know, are always working on different projects and, you know, as kind of independent, you know, self-employed musicians, and you take the gigs that when they come. And it just happens when it came to lockdown that we were all going to be in the same city, in the same place, not moving, not working on other projects. And it was the right time to get together, get into the studio, make the album that we've been talking about making for years, you know. And that kind of was the what sparked it anyway.
Talk to me then about that album. How did it differ, given the period of time that had gone and the sort of the separate project? Was it like putting on an old pair of shoes and going back to what you'd been doing previously? Was it a significant departure?
Well, it was very important to us that we sort of wanted to live together in the room and make it in Dublin. And, you know, that was really important to us just because we're friends. We're all, the four of us are really good friends. And, you know, just to spend that time together and go in. And I think that really kind of comes through, I hope, on the record. But no, because as Peter was saying earlier on, you know, we're always working on each other's projects or doing stuff together. So it was it's not like we hadn't played together for a long time, you know. So I think the older you get, the more it means, you know, like to play together.
I remember when you two did Passengers and they maintained that they had annoyed Larry because they wouldn't let him drum on it. is there not an element of that when you put on the official title of It's the Devil, does that not change the vibe slightly, or is it just the same thing?
No, I think now we're enjoying it more, you know, when the four of us get back into the room, as Colin said, as you get older, you realize, okay, these, you know, we're going to make something that's going to be out there forever. When you look back and you look on Spotify and you see a song like Waiting getting whatever it is, 3 or 4 million streams, and you think, well, people, that's around for a long time. That's, you know, so when we're recording, when we go back into the studio and, you know, the red light goes on and we do a take and we finish and the last chord rings out and look around and everybody's smiling going, okay, we nailed that. That's the one. And that's going to be the song and that'll be released and everybody will get to hear that. That's, you know, I think we appreciate that a lot more now than we did when we were making the first few albums, you know, and just knocking them out and going, okay, this is what we do.
Now, I don't want to bring this down to being grubby and mercenary and commercial, but I'm going to do it nonetheless. I was talking to Nick Kershaw a while ago and he was saying that he was all hacked off that when, I can't remember what one of his biggest hits, he said that because it was a cover, if he had put his own song on the B-side back in the day, he would have made a fortune because you get a songwriting credit off the B-side as well, whereas he did two covers, so he never made any money off it. Yeah. One of the things that you guys did very well on was soundtracks. People loved you for movie soundtracks. Is that a commercial? Is that a big win commercially? Do you do better off movie soundtracks than off straight reliefs?
Yeah, for us, definitely. You know, it's always been the way. You know, we never had the big hit, international hit single. We you know, we never got beyond the
not yet, Peter.
Not yet. No. but we never got beyond the Olympia size. You know, 1,500, 2,000 capacity, which is where you'd start making money touring. But we got a lot of soundtrack work, and that is what kept us going. And
As long as the Batman franchise continues to do well, you're not in penury yet.
No, not yet.
When you therefore make albums, do you make albums with, what's that Tom Petty line, "There Ayer Nor Man Says I Don't Hear a Single"? Do you aim for a single, or do you say, no, we're just going to make what the totality of the album?
No, absolutely not. Never have aimed for a single. You just, they make themselves apparent if that's what it is. But never thought about soundtracks or singles or anything like that. And because that's you have to do what excites you at that time when you're making, you know, creatively. And it just obviously the music that we do suits that, maybe, you know, suits, you know, to picture for whatever reason, but it never was a conscious decision to try and do that.
Do you have favourite songs of each album?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. We love all our children. But they're, yeah. I think.
But one of them is particularly good and does their homework very well.
But you can't tell the others.
Well, that precludes me asking the next question that I wanted to ask was, off the new album, which do you strongly recommend? There? By the way, am I right in saying that Hozier's, the person who produced Hozier's first album, was your producer on this?
Yes.
Rob Curran, who's a friend of ours from, we were in school together and we had sort of flirted over the years with a couple of tracks, but we hadn't done a full-on relationship. And so he did a fantastic job.
He also did the last PJ Harvey album and was nominated for a Grammy for that, so...
Nice company to be moving around in. The new album is called All the Days. Are you're going to be touring it? Do we know?
Yes.
Details?
We're in Whelan's on Thursday.
If you see people doing their homework, that'll be their children. All the Days is the album. Big thank you to Colin Devlin and Peter Devlin, otherwise known as the Devlins.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.